Friday afternoon, late Friday afternoon. And the only piece of legislation before us today is House Bill 236 in the Crimes Department. Representative Boyer, would you like to address us? Oh, yeah, members present. Representative Boucher, Bernard, Davidson, Ellison, Donnelly.
You're welcome. Let's start with a prayer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my name for the record is Mark Boyer, Representative District 20B in Fairbanks. And I passed around the recent cartoon editorial comment from the Chicago Tribune, and I thought it was a good way to kind of start this out. A couple of Catholic priests talking about separation of church and state, and let's let the state keep their lottery and we'll keep our bingo. The point is, and I thought it would be a good point to start out with today, is that gambling is big business in Alaska, and it's around us, and it's some people would claim rampant and somewhat out of control. And I had introduced the lottery bill as a first step toward some kind of additional level of control at the state level. With regard to gambling generally. And I think that as we continue to approach gambling generally, we're going to have to try to tighten down more and more on what is going on. And what that necessarily means is more enforcement ability and power at the state level to make sure that the games we do have and do authorize for charitable organizations are in fact charitable to those organizations and not to the operators that are operating games for those charitable organizations. And I don't really know where to start. We can run through the bill, but I thought perhaps a little discussion of philosophy is perhaps even more important than the mechanics of the bill. What we do have before us is a bill that was passed by the House last year with some minor changes. It creates a lottery corporation within the Department of Revenue, much like AHFC or the Permanent Fund Corporation, in as much as those two are within the department or under the Department of Revenue for purposes of accounting and that type of thing. The structure is kind of boilerplate structure for corporations, public private government corporations in the state. It's very straightforward. We have executive directors and a board of directors. But what makes this lottery corporation different, and what makes this lottery proposal different than ones you've seen before, is the fact that we take some language that has been used recently with the mental health lands legislation and sets up a quasi-dedication of funds from the proceeds and net proceeds of the lottery and dedicates those funds for public broadcasting and the Arts Council in the state, both programs which were eliminated in the first Cooper budget and have since received a small amount of funding. And the way we do that is through a simple technique of saying that we've created an arts and public broadcasting fund within the general fund, and the net proceeds of the lottery shall accrue to that fund within the general fund and then be appropriated by the legislature first for the operational needs of the Arts Council and the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, and then for any other purpose that the legislature sees fit. That's not a strict dedication. There's nothing binding in it. But clearly what I've tried to do is create a constituency for not only the lottery, but for a clean game, a real clean, straight game in town, in the state. And we've added as board members two members, one from the arts community and one from the public broadcasting community, so they have a very strong interest in making sure that the corporation is run to their best interests, and that it's a clean game. And I think in doing that, involving people who have a real strong interest at hand, makes the corporation stronger for it. And perhaps, Mr. Chairman, we could just talk about people's questions or try to answer questions. It's a fairly straightforward thing. Either you like lotteries or you don't like them. We have the ability under some grandfathered permits to run lotteries now. And in fact, one lottery has been recently run in Fairbanks. It started out to be a $450,000 gross dollar lottery, They didn't raise nearly that amount. In fact, it was a little over $300,000, as I recall it, that they raised. And with their costs and the payout and everything, their net was not very much money. But it was a first shot at a lottery in the state. And Sally Smith with the department worked with that group in Fairbanks, the Mitchell Raceway Association, to make sure that that was a good game. Again, they didn't perform nearly as well as they thought they were going to. But the idea is that people in the state are intrigued by the idea of gaming in general, and a lottery is just another game that people will be involved in if given the opportunity. A statewide lottery could net certainly enough money to take care of the needs of the Broadcasting Commission and their grantees, and also the Arts Council and their grantees for years to come. And I'd like to see us move ahead go ahead and put something on the books that's meaningful, something that will provide funding for these organizations and for other funding for other purposes. One of the things that I talked about in my campaign was looking for ways to generate dollars that were outside of the general fund for programs that I felt strongly about, and I feel strongly about the need to continue funding for the arts and also public broadcasting. And this is new funding outside of the general fund. And It certainly poses an interesting question for people, though, and I knew it would do that, and that's, I think, why we're all here, is to look at different ways to fund things other than using the general fund, which we know is growing smaller and it being heavily taxed. And with that, perhaps I can just try to answer some questions. Representative Boucher?
Miles got some questions. M-O-U-T-H. First of all, there's two things here. Are we creating a lottery to create revenue for two very worthwhile entities that I think the state has a responsibility to fund? Or are we using the goodwill of public broadcasting and the arts to create a state lottery? Now, I think you better have the answer to this question, because when the balloon runs up, that will be the political reaction to it. And we often run balloons up and we fail to understand that the public is out there. One thing I don't want to see is we fought from zero, which Mr. Northup will tell you, for the public broadcasting back, and we have it in the budget simply because it's right. This state, it's one of the finest things that the state has, and maybe we don't need it in Anchorage, and maybe we don't need it in some of the urban areas, but it becomes a matter of extreme importance. And my entire approach was, if we're going to plan for the Pacific Rim in the future, that economic information can be passing over the same signal that Charlie's Angels are, and the technology is there. So that would be my concern. To make the few extra bucks that we're missing, would people walk away from public broadcasting and say, hey, they're taken care of by a lottery, and the lottery would become the constituency. Right now, people want it. They fight for it. So that's something that I would address to you and over your shoulder to Charlie. Maybe you missed your $1 million goal. I believe that the very fact that in this year, when everybody is hanging tough on everything else, that we could get the governor, agreeably so, to back off from a $7 million cut for public broadcasting, and I think while there's some battle in the Senate, it will prevail. Why? Because Alaska needs it. I mean, we are not Iowa. That would be my first. As far as the arts, you got to think of the same thing. So that would be my concern. Hey, a lottery specifically designated for them? Maybe not bad. A lottery for the Arts and Council, but my concern is with the state. And you have to answer. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are we doing? Are we using a constituency to get an otherwise objectionable bill?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that it's an otherwise objectionable bill, but clearly I'm looking for a broader constituency for the idea of a lottery. But to get back to the first response, is that the lottery makes good sense as a way to generate revenue for government. You either buy into that or you don't. 26 other states in the union have bought into the idea and are raising revenue. This state will raise a lot less revenue than any other state that currently has a lottery. But there's no doubt that $14, $15, or $20 million is an awful lot of money in our state today. And you can fund an awful lot of things beyond public broadcasting and the arts. council with that money. Now, the other thing is that even though we've tied the three things together, it wouldn't obviate the need to continue to fight for the funding, because there's nothing dedicated about this. It accrues to a special account, but believe me, you continue to have to fight. There are competing interests. It just brings in a constituency that's probably going to continue to argue and fight and push for these funds as aggressively as ever before, and you've given them a strong interest in making sure that this corporation is run efficiently as well. But they will have an identifiable source of funds to pursue. Now, every year we open ourselves up to the potential of not seeing any funds there. And I'm not sure, and I'm not convinced that we will always be able to prevail in either one of those areas. And that's why I see this as an opportunity to create a separate funding source that's easily identifiable, as no other general fund dollars are easily identifiable. And people can say, these are our dollars. We've participated in the raising of these dollars. We've made sure that the lottery is an efficient, clean operation, and make their case then for why they should get funding from that fund for any other purpose of government. So, but there's the problem, and I know it's there, that people will become lazy and acquiesce, and perhaps we could lose funding. I hope that what happens is the opposite. Mm-hmm. The people will continue to push for the funding that will be made available here, but that is not guaranteed.
Just bring one other point. Excuse me. I'm sorry. And I'll shut up, because you've got so much
done
wisdom.
Done very well. I appreciate it.
Okay. We're funding based on estimated projections. That's how we base. So this year they say, oh, public broadcasting doesn't need anything. And next year you have a downturn, and the whole thing could crash with it. So think about the big picture.
There's
That's all
no,
I'm
yeah.
saying. I'm not. All I'm doing is trying to toss the big picture out there. And with that, I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Benoit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Boyer. And just remind the members of the rest of the committee that Paramutual will be on the floor tomorrow. Since we're on the subject, you know. Representative Boyer, there is a fiscal note of 564
right
in there, and I might have missed it, but what are we looking at revenue projections? Do we have any revenue projections on this, or anything as far as...
Stay awake.
I'll let Sally speak
okay.
more directly to
okay.
the fiscal note and the revenue generation ability, but
okay.
but the in the past, we've looked at a net proceeds after the first year of operation, so between... after you've set the thing up and have a year's operation of somewhere in the neighborhood of $14 to $20 million, somewhere in that swing. It could be as much as $22 million, $24 million. It's unknown right now, but I would say that you're probably safe. If you said $10 million after year one, you'd probably be fairly safe. But what's interesting, or what's interesting to put that into perspective, is that other charitable gaming in the state, I think the Department of Revenue has said, is about a $50 million a year venture or game. I like to call it a game because it's all gaming in the state right now. And a lot of that, in fact, a large degree, or a large part of that is pull tabs. And that is like what we'd be doing with a statewide lottery, is a different pull tab type game. So I think that there's even a larger potential for a lottery here, I mean, to generate a lot more money than what has been talked about in the past. That's just my opinion.
Just one more, Mr. Chairman. And as far as getting back to this funding source and directing it back in the borderline of dedicated funding, is there, I mean, if push comes to shove, could somebody get at these revenues other than having them dedicated?
Anybody can get them. They're not dedicated. Like I said, it's a quasi. Right. All it really does is, I mean, by setting up this separate account that's called the Arts and Public Broadcasting account, it's an identifiable pool of dollars then. And the legislature shall appropriate first. Well, there's nothing binding there. It says that, but we can appropriate for any purpose. So anybody that wanted to can get to that. It's not a dedicated fund. It's a hybrid. And in fact, I literally, when I saw the way they drafted the mental health lands legislation, the mental health legislation this year, and used that language, crafted that language, I thought, well, if it works there, then it certainly can work elsewhere, because it does the same thing for mental health people. It identifies a pool or a stream of money that's available for mental health appropriations first, and then for any other purpose that the legislature sees fit. Now, there's nothing binding on the legislature in any way, shape, or form, but it becomes more difficult to appropriate for other purposes first before taking care of this other need, mental health need in that particular case, and the arts and public broadcasting need in this particular case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Senator Boyer, that Representative Ballinger brought up a very important point. I think, for want of a better term, stealing the flock is something that would result in a very unfortunate setback for broadcasting and the arts. Because I, too, feel that these are two very important responsibilities of government. And to take a gamble that we would continue to have the kind of dedication and support for these two areas of funding for from government, I think is a very big gamble indeed. And I guess from the offset would wish a very tortuous, slow, and unsuccessful journey for this bill. And yet I have the highest regard for your capability. But I do think that this gamble is simply too great, and we must have, I think, funding for the arts and for public broadcasting. So I'm not willing, on that account, to take that gamble. And we've been through this all before. And I guess there are probably be questions until this bill dies or until, in fact, we do face the lottery. And some of the questions that I would like to ask and have you deal with, and those who support this kind of legislation, are who, in fact, will pay? And how will we market this thing? And where will the money go? What about the money that presently goes in the bingo circuit to charity? And how do we expect that this other opportunity to gamble will impact the monies that go to those charities? And how about our social services? In fact, it seems to me that such an opportunity, it reinforces the attitude that here is something for nothing, it's a get-rich-quick scheme, it's something that anybody can play, true enough, but not everybody can afford to pay. But in fact, does it attract those who cannot afford to pay more than others? So I also have problems with what you stated as regards the mental health scenario. Because after all, we're talking about a legal obligation that our state government has failed to live up to. And I think that puts a different twist as far as the language is concerned. And I'm not one to try to hold up things, because I think everything should have a fair opportunity. But I'm frankly very concerned that, I mean, I get more letters supporting the arts from Kodiak than just about anything else, including fishermen. But fishermen are notorious for not saying anything that affects them until it's almost too late. But we do have the following for public radio. It's a healthy following for public radio and the arts in Kodiak. And so I seriously feel that we will do damage. I don't think the gamble is going to be worth it, because we know that as the funds get more and more difficult, the easier it's going to be for the rationale to grab those funds. So I'll have more questions later on the lottery bill. But I must say at the outset that I will work hard to prevent a state lottery from taking place, because I simply don't believe that gambling is worth the risk. And I think that there is some way, in fact, that we can play to the urge to take a gamble, keep it even cleaner than what you propose here.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to perhaps make a couple of comments. I'd say that the gamble that we're playing today without a dedicated or quasi-dedicated or identifiable pool of monies for those two things was a gamble that we almost lost, and I count myself one of the major supporters of both of those in this legislature. And without patting myself on the back, having been a member of the education subcommittee, I was the one on the front line moving the motions to add money back in at, for the Arts Council, and saw no one in my committee and very few people in my caucus that were supporting that effort. And believe me, if all you need is a few people gone and the table is turned, and I'm not sure that I want to gamble again with the future of arts funding or public broadcasting funding. We have friends for those two entities now, and we may not always have friends in the legislature, and that's a large gamble. I think that, and that is why I would like to see us have something that's clearly identifiable as a funding source for these two things. Now, the only gamble is that you have less revenues one year and aren't able to fund the needs of both of those entities, and clearly that's a possibility. But I think the larger gamble is that with dwindling revenues and different prioritizations, that arts funding disappears and public broadcasting shrinks to just the minimal coverage for radio, and I'm not sure that I'm willing to gamble that far either. So that's why I'm going to continue to push this legislation. I see it as a way to keep that constituency alive and vibrant and involved in something that may well take care of their financial needs.
Let me pursue. If I may offer a follow-up. Representative Boyer, how much money would you like to see go each say next 3 years into these two different areas? What kind of funding would you anticipate would be a healthy level of funding for our state?
$10 million for the two. I think roughly 2.8 to 3 million, maybe a little bit more for the arts, and about 7, maybe a little bit more for public broadcasting. So I think, you know, around $10 million is a healthy budget for both of those.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Boyer, and I guess I can go back to Representative Davidson. So are you telling me it's a no vote on paramutual now? Did we push a button?
No.
Count on it.
Okay.
Okay, no, Representative Boyer, there is, for example, if we went forward and this came in and we did not generate the revenues that we expected to fund the arts and the other. There is nothing to preclude us or to stop us to funding it in additional to the way we've been funding it in the past.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. This is all general fund money.
Right.
It's just identified.
In other words, I feel that it's not necessarily saying that we're not going to fund the arts or the public broadcasting because we, if, for example, we did not generate enough money. That's all option is there. And I think one of the other things that comes along, and one thing we may look at is whether we're talking about parimutuel or lottery or wherever, the social side of it, and is the social services demands going to go up? And there may be something to say or to look at to dedicate the quasi dedication of a certain percentage of funding that could be used for social service. And I don't know for a fact that this would put more of a man, but there always is that cloud out there that's saying that if parimutuel's in or if lottery's in or bingo or something, that it takes people away and then the social cost of social services goes up and everything else. I'm just putting that out on the table.
Well, you know, the if I may, Mr. Chairman, the liberal argument against gaming in general is that, you know, you take the money from those who are least able to pay, and that isn't fortunately backed up by most statistical analysis or statistical reviews of the process. That in fact, what you find is middle income and upper middle income and upper income folks for the gamblers. The people, and I think what we liken it to is that the wino who doesn't have any money, who needs the quarter to buy the bottle, and you know, the sits a bag of drinks, rot-gut booze, and continues to eat his brain up. Well, that's not the, it doesn't equate to the kind of thing that we're looking at gambling. You don't find people, although there are people who are clearly sick and need help and who are compulsive in their gambling, those people aren't affected by this kind of gambling. Those people are they're sick and they're gonna be gambling regardless, and I'm not trying to rationalize why we should do anything, but that is clearly gonna go on regardless. And I actually think that this, as it matures through the process, may well end up as either a municipal option or something where you have nonprofit entities running running the games in some sense, because they're doing it now, and they're enjoying it, and they're, in fact, in Fairbanks, they're trying to put together another game now, a large group of 12 nonprofit entities who are receiving money from pool tabs now. They're trying to put together a lottery where they pull their permits in an aggregate and are able to run a larger game, and they're working with the Department of Revenue now, and I would like to see them involved in this, and they're very supportive of this effort, too, because they see it as an opportunity to come before the legislature and participate in the process and also get some additional monies from it. So I don't know that it necessarily takes money or would take money away from those groups of people who are benefiting from pull tabs and bingo and other charitable gaming now.
Would this have any effect on federal funding if, say, a healthy part of public broadcasting now is federal funding? So you got federal, and that's one of the major reasons we were successful last time, because of federal funding coming in. We took part of our arguments with the governor and Department of Administration was, hey, you're going to lose the whole equipment because the federal government expected you to do something. I'm just wondering if somewhere in the line, if your source of revenue was that, would that have any effect on it? I'm asking a question, and I think it ought to be thought about, because anything that would jeopardize federal funding, we ought to really give some thought to. I don't have the answer to that, but I would like to make sure somewhere down there in some silly paragraph we haven't shot our foot off. It wouldn't be the first time. I don't know. I'm asking the question. Has it been given thought to? Has it come up?
Yes, it's come up, and I've given it a lot of thought and asked the question, too, because of the way we've structured it. We're just calling it, I'm trying to make it identifiable, but for the end product of the appropriation is just a funding source in the budget, and it comes out as a general fund appropriation. It's not a direct line from gambling to public broadcasting. It's, you know, the lottery to this account within the general fund, and then the general fund appropriation. There's no linkage after the net proceeds accrue to the parts of public.
Read what your position paper said. The net proceeds of the lottery after expenses and prizes would be deposited in an arts and public broadcasting account within the state's general fund. Is it legal to have an arts and public broadcasting account?
Once we create it by statute, yes, you can create any kind of account within the general fund. We have a permanent fund dividends account within the
which was
statutorily created.
Statute. Okay, all right. Okay. I'm interested to hear what the department has to say about it.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm not.
No, I
wasn't dismissing you.
I think I'm going to sit over here.
No, I want to hear what Sally's got to say.
Okay.
Mark. She's been bombed already. I mean, she's just trying to get regulate what she's already got. And is overwhelmed.
Representative Boyer, you probably have run the numbers. The numbers I speak about are how many 18? What would it be? 18 or 16?
18.
18. And how many Alaskans are we talking about then?
Yeah. I have no idea.
And how much would each Alaskan over the age of 18 have to shell out to make this go?
I'll leave those to Bob Thomas, who may have some of those answers, but I don't know. Those have been run in years past, and I have not run them. But I would say, or like to add with regard to Sally's operation, I chair that budget subcommittee for the Department of Revenue, and I'm as concerned as anybody, in fact, probably more so than most, about how she is or isn't able to enforce games of chance and skill. And this year, I feel fortunate that we've been able to put money into the budget for an enforcement officer with a substantial travel budget, because when she's had an enforcement person, she hasn't had a travel budget, so that the person couldn't be moving around the state anyway. So I'm making, on the other side of things, small efforts toward an ability for the department to be able to enforce the existing games of chance and skills that are out there. And I, you know, I'm pledging myself to more activity on that budget. And I think that we will eventually move toward a statewide gaming commission, because we need to have a larger umbrella organization that's looking at all of the various gaming activities in the state. And that's something we don't have. We need something that has an enforcement capability as well.
May I ask?
I just have a comment. But don't you think we play enough games here already?
Yeah, right on.
this is a gut question. You can ask it or not ask it. How, when you started out, Joe, did you just have a lottery bill?
No.
How did public broadcasting, at what time in this legislative scenario did public broadcasting and arts come on board?
When they were zeroed out in the budget, I had been looking at actually an historic gambling bill way before I was looking at a lottery bill. But I'd been approached about the lottery bill, and I frankly saw an opportunity to marry two things that were dear to me, and I did. And that's how it came together. It wasn't that I wanted a lottery bill first.
Let me send a message to Mr. Northrop. If I'd have known that he'd have done this, I would not have fought this hard for public broadcasting. If he did not have that much faith in it, mm-hmm. I would have backed off. I'd have fought at a reasonable level. But I've got faith in it, even more so than he. This has survived through all kinds of politics. And it will survive. If the governor or anybody else had pulled the public broadcasting on this in this state, he might as well have jumped over the cliff. And I so told him. I mean, you're affecting every person's life in this state. And some bureaucratic idiot over here, and I so told him at the table, just says, well, it had only cut 10% of the people off the people. Never had so much mail in all my life. And we went to the people via TV, and man, he says, hey, quit, back off. But I'm really disappointed that it was at that time that when it was zeroed out. So that kind of answers a question. And if I sound disappointed about it, I am, because the battle could have been won on its own merits.
And it has been this time.
It will be. Continue. I don't think it'll ever reach its lowest point. I've never seen an assault on public broadcasting. Arts, I'm not sure of. It suffers a much, but this has got the more, I'd hate to stand against public broadcasting in this state. I mean, you're a dead duck. And
okay.
I assume, excuse me.
No, it's all right. Go ahead.
No, but you're not getting anything.
I am anxious to hear from you.
Yes, I am too.
Well, I seems like you would like to ask Sally Smith some questions. Is that feeling here? Okay. Sally, would you like to join us?
Not really, but I will.
I noticed that by you.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be
my
right
poker
there.
Face, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to the bathroom. I don't want to talk about it now.
You're leaving me now?
I want to go to the bathroom. Sit down. Damn it. Take a piss.
The record, get that.
Take that off the record.
Okay. I'm Sally Smith, Director of Public Services with the Department of Revenue. And Mr. Chair, I must admit this is an awkward position because, frankly, this bill does not say anything about the implementation of a lottery. It only establishes a board. So the information that I can give you in regard to your questions will be based primarily on information I gathered last year when there was a bill in that would implement a lottery. This bill simply authorizes the board with the authority to go develop regulations to implement a lottery. Now, with that as a premise, I will try to answer as many questions as I can.
Where's that, David?
Why is
in other words, this bill strikes out at the very start to go expand the bureaucracy. And yet, it looks like we're going to have to get tough on this bill.
But
I shall put my fiscal note on top.
Okay, from the get-go, it's been over $500,000. And what's to ensure that it's not going to cost more than over $500,000? And where does it stop? Where does it stop?
Pardon me.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll do my best to answer Representative Davidson's questions through you. That's a tough question. It's an answer that can't be given until decisions are made as to what lotteries are going to be implemented. The $500,000, $155,000 of that, is money that would hire the Institute of Social and Economic Research to take a look at our demographics. If you're planning on making, last year's figures ran between $12 and $20 million, if you're looking at that as a profit margin, you have an incredible front-end capital investment. But it can range. Even that can range according to what you want to do. If you want to start out with instant tickets, you're really looking at the costs of getting the tickets printed, getting the tickets distributed, securing them. And this cannot be taken lightly. Securing a ticket in Alaska is an incredible undertaking. Deciding where your distribution points are going to be, which is the compounding effort on your security of your tickets. Now, I noticed a couple of faces not sure what I was saying there. Take, for instance, the state of Washington, where they have bonded warehouses with armed guards protecting the instant ticket stock. You have to decide where these are going to be. You have to have security for transporting the tickets. If you decide to have the tickets available in rural Alaska, you got to get them there. And you got to get them there securely. You have to have a secure place once you get them there. You have to keep them secure while you're selling them. You have to have a foolproof mechanism for accounting for each and every ticket, returning the money, and so on and so forth. In other states, an instant lottery will run a couple of years before the profits start to decline. I also have left off, of course, marketing and some of the other things. Now, these are not items that are in this fiscal note because there's no mechanism in this bill that says what's going to be done, and until those decisions are made by this board, there's no way to approach that. Anyway, historically, going back to that, if you then want to generate continuing interest in your lottery, you need to switch to computer games, online games, and then you run into a whole separate level of thinking and viewing the situation. You can go for cheap, fast, dirty front-end loading. You can go hire a company to come in with preset programs that'll run your computer games for a very low fee. But once you buy that computer system, if you want a different game, you have that company, period. One of the things we talked about last year when we looked at implementing it was the possibility of having our own computer system with our own ability to adapt the games. More expensive up front, less expensive in the long run. And the adaptability of our own computer system, if you wanted to have games in rural Alaska, of being able to key the computer so a person could buy their fish and game license from that person. We don't have business licenses available in rural Alaska, but there are many state programs available that, like the McDonald's cash register, you could key fish and game license and have the receipts keyed into that account, and key a lottery ticket and have the receipts keyed into that account so that the rural store owner doesn't have these incredible amounts of bookkeeping and commingled monies. Now, I think that's the wise, prudent way to look at it. This bill allows a 5-member board to take a look at those and establish the ground rules, and then they come in next year to seek funding, or whenever, for what they've decided they want to implement. But the bulk of this $500,000 is ISER to take a look at the feasibility. And you know, you're going to hear a lot of testimony of, well, this is the way it works in Oregon, this is the way it works in Illinois. There is no other Alaska-type delivery system that's really online now. I heard reports last year there was one like it in Australia. I do know of a man who developed a plan for a lottery for the U.S. Army worldwide that would certainly be compatible with what we'd be trying to do up here. That was not implemented. The Army pulled out when the tickets went out to bid. So we don't have a track record from them either. Just some good planning information we can get our hands on.
Okay, Representative Menard.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Sally, would you give me some history on Representative Boyer said you were involved in a lottery that had been up in Fairbanks for 6 months, and what the profit margin was or where it is and why it stopped.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, you're here to Representative Menard. We've been involved with them on the periphery. You listened to me for over an hour this week, you know, kind of cry on the table, I suppose. They didn't run this totally legally. They didn't have their permit numbers on their tickets and a few other small items. But there again, you know, we couldn't very well go up and shut them down either. They had anticipated that they would sell $450,000 worth of tickets. They did this, another slightly illegal thing, they gave the ticket sellers a percentage, and the law clearly says you cannot participate in charitable games for percentage of the profit. The tickets were somewhat secure. I kind of felt in many ways that a lot of the ticket outlets were an accident waiting to happen. The marketing was obviously going to be limited because it was an all-volunteer organization. You know, they don't have paid staff to go around. They didn't have a big advertising budget. Advertising for an operation like that is a limitation as well, because charitable gaming isn't allowed to use the airwaves, nor are they allowed to advertise through any medium that uses the mails. A state lottery could do that. They can advertise on television, and they can advertise in newspapers with mail circulation. So there's a difference there. As I understand it, they made about $8,000. They did not realize what they were hopeful they would. They put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it. I do not know if they're planning on participating in the dialogue here or not. Certainly there are vast differences between the two endeavors. But I think it's also a good microcosm for the committee to look at. You might want to seek out the people who put it on and ask them questions. SER, again, I don't mean to proselytize for them, but we're still trying to say that we're looking at our university mechanism for research first, and there may be another means of contracting with an entity that could do good research for you. I think you really have to look at the population of the state. It's one of the reasons I think that this bill is a good start if you choose to seek out possibilities of a lottery, because it would be the vehicle to do that. I think you have to look at the demographics. I think you have to look at the money available and have to decide if the return projected would be worth it. No projection is going to be accurate on the mark. It will give you an idea. It will give you a much better idea than a feeling of, I want a lottery, let's go have a lottery. I don't think that that's the approach that you as responsible people are going to want to take. I think this is a possibility to approach it responsibly, and that you're really left with the philosophical question of whether or not you want to pursue it.
Any further questions for Ms. Smith? Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I do have volumes of information should you require it at some point.
Thank you. Charles Northrup, can you state your name and who you represent?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Charles Northrup. I currently serve as Executive Director of the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. I was also the founding Executive Director of the Commission. I spent 24 years of my professional life creating and directing various telecommunications activities in the state. Public broadcasting has grown from one public radio station in 1962 to a coordinated, integrated system by about 1978. Today, there are 4 public television stations, 16 public radio stations, several repeaters and translators. Together, they provide public television to about 90% of our population, public radio to about 97% of our population. The system, public radio and television, represents a capital investment in excess of $50 million. It was built through a combination of federal, state, and institutional funding, plus substantial contributions by corporations, listeners, and viewers. If public broadcasting were to go dark in Alaska, over 50% of that equipment would be repossessed by federal funders, and the entire investment then would have to be repaid by the state, if you will, if you wanted to recreate it at some future time. Annual operating revenues for public broadcasting in Alaska in FY86, and I use that year because it's the last year for which we have complete numbers, totaled $13.5 million, of which the state, through the APBC, provided $7.4 million, or about 55% of the total. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting on the federal level and corporate and listener and viewer support provided the remainder. Each public station in the state, when all of its revenues are considered, spends more locally and in Alaska than it receives in state grants. Public broadcasting's most important product is its programming service, and Representative Boucher has already indicated the kind of constituent support that it enjoys. There's no other way to originate true statewide broadcast coverage of regular or recurring activities. The most basic life and safety information would not be available in many areas of Alaska without public broadcasting. And public stations provide programs that the commercial system cannot supply. The public system is interactive, interconnected, with the urban stations supplying necessary economic and government information to rural areas and other kinds of information coming the other way. These services suffered a 15% cut in state support over the past year, and at best, we're looking at another 6% cut to be absorbed in the coming year, for a total reduction over the last 2 years of 21%. Public broadcasting needs to have a stable base of funding support. The APBC feels that public broadcasting is worthy of that support, and that that support is a legitimate and necessary use of state funds. The Commission is mindful, however, of the problems the state is facing regarding declining oil revenues. Over the past 2 years, our long-range planning committee has grappled with ways to reduce costs and still preserve Alaska's unique and vital public broadcasting system. As each alternative we looked at was considered, the same conclusion kept re-emerging, that our current system is an excellent one. How can we find new revenues to continue it if state general fund support must decline? One idea came to the fore, an official state lottery conducted on public broadcasting to benefit public broadcasting. The APBC came to this conclusion separately and apart from Representatives Boyer and Cato. We welcome and appreciate their action in filing the bill that's before you now. But for Representative Boucher's information, I hope Representative Boyer will concur, the APBC at no time requested the filing of this bill.
At no time.
Okay, fine. I hear you pop off in here. My apologies.
Nor did the arts.
2 days in a row.
I'd like to sketch briefly why the Commission believes a statewide lottery is a good way to raise funds for public broadcasting, and why public broadcasting may be uniquely well-suited to benefit from lottery proceeds. An official state lottery is the only form of gambling which broadcast stations can broadcast or promote. The Federal Communications Commission's rules and regulations prohibit any station from broadcasting lotteries or information about lotteries or any other form of gambling. Alaska's public radio and television stations can't take, therefore, on the air advantage of the current gaming statute in the state of Alaska. The FCC, however, has made a permanent exception in its rules that allow stations to broadcast official state lotteries. Public broadcasting could therefore be designated as the system over which lottery drawings would be held, and in a manner of speaking, earn its own keep. Such an arrangement would also help the legislature and the population as a whole understand the creation of this special fund within the general fund for the proceeds of the lottery to be used for public broadcasting. The content of public broadcasting offers programming of a positive nature that could offer some countervailing value to those who have objections to lotteries on moral or social grounds. Public broadcasting has taken the lead in combating alcohol and drug abuse through its Chemical People series. Its contributions to education are obviously too numerous to mention. Documentaries on such topics as child abuse, race discrimination, many others, have placed it in the first rank of institutions noted for promoting the public interest in the broadest sense of that term. Funds for public broadcasting for a state lottery would be undesignated funds from a programming point of view. A criticism that public broadcasting faces from time to time is that it airs some programs simply because commercial underwriters are willing to fund those programs rather than some others. Funds provided to public broadcasting from the proceeds of a state lottery would be available for programming in response to state and community needs. They'd be highly credible and objective due to the nonpartisan and disinterested source of the funding. It also seems to me that there's a double win involved in funding from a state lottery for public broadcasting and the arts. The funds that now come out of the general fund to fund those activities no longer have to go in that direction. And therefore, it's either a net saving, or it provides funds for some other worthy cause that presently cannot be accomplished. In summary, the APBC welcomes the proposal for a state lottery to benefit public broadcasting. Public broadcasting would be legally able to conduct the lottery and promote it. And public broadcasting programs are worthy of this type of support and will return to society high public interest value in exchange for lottery funds. And finally, lottery funds will provide an objective and unbiased source of support for public broadcasting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I welcome the opportunity to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Representative Davidson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Northrup, the board vote that you talked about, was it a unanimous vote to go for this kind of funding?
I believe it was.
Okay, and I think you've made the perfect case for keeping public radio in the state of Alaska. And I submit that with the constituency that you have identified and have so carefully brought about, brought along, and nurtured, I don't see how you could lose. In fact, I would submit that you've done a better job in the United States Navy and their program to disperse their forces to different places for congressional influence. But I still think that you're talking about tainted money. And let me get
you
some...
Paint yours and paint mine.
Paint mine? Yeah. I will promise you it taint mine. But I think that it would not necessarily be a double win. And I think that... well, I can give you my... I helped start the station in Kodiak. So I have a background, too, as far as having been involved in public broadcasting. I guess I would respectfully disagree with some of the conclusions that you have drawn and would hope that you would work as hard for funding next year from the same pattern that we've been able to work and hopefully will prevail this year that we have another year.
Mr. Chairman, my answer to that is, of course, I will, and the commission will as well. I was part of the prayer vigil up in the Senate Finance Committee room until 1:15 Thursday morning. And the result of that vigil was not exactly encouraging from our standpoint. Public broadcasting on the Senate side is now back to $1.3 million. So we're kind of facing a 50-50 chance proposition now. It's not as rosy as it was. But yes, the commission is committed, the stations are committed, I certainly am committed. And as I say, the commission feels that public broadcasting is worthy of regular state support. No question about it. But we also, the commission has also stated on the record that it wants to do whatever it can to assist the state in finding revenues to help support the activity.
This is, I was just asking Mark's, by gesture, is this the meat of it, this 564,000?
When you say the meat of it, you mean?
Meaning that basically what it should do, as I understand it, is this bill would, with this fiscal note, implement a study.
It creates the corporation to go out and look at other states, to do the study, do the demographics. This, we're not going to start playing any games if that's where we're going to come.
Okay.
The game is a long way off. But yes, this gets us on the road.
Okay, who prepared the makeup of the fiscal note?
The department, Sally.
You did, Sally?
Personally.
Okay, so this program analyst is going to play an important role.
Probably.
Do you have any further questions of Mr. Northrup?
Oh, well, no, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
I just want to identify to the committee.
Thank you.
That was all the witnesses, and there's a Mr. Bob Thomas is here, if he's available for questions, but he hasn't asked to testify. So, Representative Davidson?
Questions for Mr. Thomas?
Did you want to?
I have some questions
testify?
For Mr. Thomas.
Yes, you can. Mr. Thomas, would you like to
finish? Would you like to finish with Mrs.
Well, that's it.
Well, I'm sorry.
Finish that.
No, I wanted to know the makeup, if I may.
Sure.
Okay, you've got an executive director at 6,662, a research analyst at 4,961, an administrative, this is per month, at 3,160, and an analyst programmer, range 4, at 4,291, and I noticed the systems, okay, if you are going to have someone analyze national mainframe systems, which this must be, I question whether a person at a programmer level 5 would be the qualified person, a person sufficiently qualified. You need somebody at the systems analyst level. Now, this is fine for a person who is programming. How did you arrive at this particular level, at the programmer level 4?
Mr. Chair, through you to Representative Boucher, we tried to be fair more than anything. We were not trying to pump up a fiscal note. We were trying to get as close as we thought we could. There's also to be an executive director on board under this bill that is appointed by the board.
Okay.
And from what I know of the people available, I think you're going to have some pretty sophisticated people that would be in that talent pool to choose from. And they might know where you could get someone. Now, you might notice, too, that's not for a full 12 months.
Yeah, I notice it's for 5 months, right. But this is a pretty key person.
I agree, and that could certainly be changed.
And I think what you've got is if you had a systems analyst at $6,600 instead of an executive director, because it would appear to me over here that the executive director is going to pick the programmer for. And I'd watch that, because, you know, it's unless that person has got some background on picking people like that, your highest qualification should be the person who is going to come out and examine these whiz boxes. Because, boy, let me tell you, they can sit there and whack away at keys and really make you think they're doing something, and you don't know a damn thing about what they're doing. So that, and they've got a way of the program always needs an update. So I would apply some management oversight, somebody who in that process could make sure you had the right person, because it looks like they play a pretty key role. And that's just some advice. Then over here, I noticed on page 5 of the 6 pages, director candidates assumptions. 3 candidates will be traveling from Baltimore, Chicago, and Sacramento for final interviews. I'm going to ask the age-old question. Are we going outside to get somebody to run our lottery?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we would have to go outside. The provisions in the bill says somebody experienced in lottery, and there's no one in the state of Alaska, to my knowledge, that is experienced and has the background in state lottery that's required by statute if this passes. I don't think, frankly, that you want anyone from the state of Alaska. You want someone who has participated in the development of a lottery somewhere else, who has hands-on experience. This is not a place for someone to come in and learn. Someone can learn from that person, but that's how most of the rest of them have also started up. They find someone who started it in another state, that person turns over the reins to the people who learned from him or her, and they move on to the next one. It's a real delicate balance and a delicate proposition. So yes, we would. There, to my knowledge, there would be no one here eligible. Another thing I would like to comment on Representative Boucher's previous thing with the programmer. Bear in mind, when we do a fiscal note, that's what enables the money to come to the agency. The agency still has flexibility, in this case it would be the board, to move the monies around within personal services. They can't move it anywhere else. They could hire less than the clerk typist or the AA, whatever is there, to get whatever position they deem necessary. Those are ballparks.
Well, I just saw it, and like you've got 4 Wang 4230 workstations. Workstations can be gotten for a lot cheaper than $2,000. You got 1 390-megabyte hard disk. Man, I could buy you a mini for $22,000.
Mr. Chair, you can't under the state procurement policies. I submit to the committee. These come right out of the state contract figures.
Well, the state that changes contract figures is getting ripped off if you're paying $22,000 for a 300-megabyte hard disk. I'll start selling them by the truckload to them at $12,000.
I can't argue, sir.
Well, that's...
That's where the figures are made up, though. They come right out of a little book that tells you what you write down.
Okay, all right. Well, I think those are, you know, that's making Representative Boyer's fiscal note a lot bigger than it should be. I think you're somebody's sandbagging you here. At least
Boyer
on that.
On the Finance Committee, I'm sure you can address that.
Okay.
I honestly think, just to respond, that Sally has been incredibly fair and
I'm not talking about her.
And,
I'm talking about somebody else sandbagging.
And on that, though, we do have in the body of the bill a provision that allows the corporation to set outside the normal procedures
as does the railroad for procurement purposes. So they would have to adopt procurement practices that aren't the state. So they could go out and purchase a system that isn't the same, that isn't under the same guidelines that the rest of the state has to operate under.
Representative Menard?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The hour is late. The TGIF party is going on. And were you looking for a motion to move this out of committee?
Would you like to make a motion or move something?
I have no objection to move it out of committee. I mean, I just wanted to ask the questions that I asked, and I'll vote for it up or down on the floor because I know he's worked hard on it. I just want you to, boy, your fiscal note, and I know Sally, somebody is selling you a bridge. That's way too much money for that. $390, that's preposterous. I thought maybe they added an extra two.
For someone professional to handle a lottery, they're not going to be satisfied with $80 a day per deal.
Well, tell me about it.
Representative Davidson.
Mr. Chairman, I think we haven't talked about numbers, and I think we should get some information from those who project these kinds of things. I'd like to know who they project will be playing these games or this lottery. How many?
Well, Representative Davis, it seems to me that's what the bill does, is set up a commission or committee to deal with those issues.
I mean, why, you know, can't we get some idea of what we're talking about if we're going to spend $500,000 or probably in the end $1 million to get some of these projections? Certainly they must have some idea at this point of what they're projecting. I'm just asking for what the experts are saying.
We still have Bob Thomas
in that problem. If we want to.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would say that Bob Thomas is here, and this is a document that was prepared by Bob, who did do some research on this, and some of the numbers have been run, and perhaps I need to let you sit and study this over the weekend.
He's probably
and,
seen who it, was actually. That prepared for?
Unless he's Mr. Thompson, but
yeah,
you
he is
hold this over till Tuesday and digest it some more, or take a look at those numbers?
Mr. Chairman, you know, I really don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. This is a bill that's obviously not going to whiz through the legislature this session, and I intend to do an awful lot of additional work on it in the interim, some educational effort for my colleagues, and I'd be happy to work with you and convert you as the wisdom would suggest.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I may need some conversion too, so I'd be happy to.
Yes, right. There's a song from Music
well,
Man.
Mr. Chairman, I think at least we can get the figures and say, what's it going to take to make this thing generate some revenue? And how long is it going to take before it generates revenue? And how much are we going to spend of state dollars before we can expect a return on the money we do spend up front? And
2 years, $420 million.
But how, okay, if we project that we're going to generate $15 million a year, and we know that there's not a whole heck of a lot of people in this state. Okay. I mean, it just seems to me the numbers are simply not there.
If you want to hold the bill over, we can hold it over till Tuesday, and then you can have some time. We can look into those numbers. The sponsors offered to work with you on answering those questions, and we can bring it back up Tuesday and discuss them.
Fine. Thank you.
How's that sound?
And the information I'd like to request is one point that Cliff mentioned early on, and that was the impact in other states that have brought on the lottery, the impact on fundraising among charitable organizations. Bingo and the whole gamut of things. I'm sure that's been done in a number of states.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that we could get any of that by Tuesday, but that's the kind of information that I hope to generate during the interim as well.
I thought Bob might have some of that
he may
from
have some
other
of
that. States.
Good.
Yes, okay.
And if I may just make one last statement, too, I think I was sullied only subtly in the whole process here by the suggestion that I married two ideas that maybe didn't need to be married together here, all for the sake of expediency, and I just suggest that there are other states who've done exactly the same thing. In fact, the state of California generates over $1 billion for its university system, and they've got a 2.5-year-old lottery system, and clearly California's a big state, a lot of people, but they decided early on that they would dedicate it for higher education, and it generates in excess of $1 billion for higher education. And so it's the kind of thing that makes sense if you decide to move ahead with it, is
is to target those dollars for some worthy causes.
Right.
Well, that's
sure. It seems clear we're not going to take any action today.
Nothing wrong with that. I just
okay, well, we'll hold this piece of legislation over till Tuesday, our meeting on Tuesday, and we'll adjourn the meeting.
Hopefully.
It's 10 minutes.